Hate from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull. I'm sorry, I was momentarily distracted by how hard you hit the V in the SNL Nerds.
I try to switch it up, keep it fresh and funky.
I was like, are there some off-brand SNL Nerds out there or something? It was like, why are we hitting the V so hard? What's going on?
Yeah, it's like, we're like the real Ghostbusters. You have to hit the V just to differentiate from the other knockoffs.
Right, we're not the Ghostbusters with the gorilla driving around based on the old Filmation cartoon.
Yeah, we're the one with the Slimer and the hot Janine Melnitz with the red hair and the glasses. That's us.
Okay, that's us. That's very disrespectful to Miss Annie Potts.
Oh dear! All right, you know what? As soon as I said it, Miss Annie Potts, I apologize. I lost my head. I'm talking in a closet. It's hot in here. I don't know what I'm saying. I'd like to apologize to the Annie Potts.
We have to point out to listeners: Darren records the podcast in a literal closet.
Yes, exactly.
That was not a metaphor. That was not like a turn of phrase of saying that Darren is closeted or anything like that. But
right, I am in a actual. 2x2 closet. Yes.
He has a literal closet so he can get like a clean sound.
Absolutely. And so apologies to the Potts family and to all my New Yorkers out there. Let's go Knicks, New York Knicks. We did it, baby. Fion, fion, fion.
Yeah. What a story that is. The Knicks won it in 5, and this was their first championship since what, 73, was it?
Yep.
That's wild.
Yeah, the New York Knicks have been terrible for a long, long time. Like the last time they made it to the finals was in '99, and I remember that being a big deal back in the day. And then they lost then to the Spurs. And
okay. So this was really like sort of unfinished business. This is payback. Okay.
That's right.
You know, I'm like seeing clips of everybody in the city partying and having a good time, and they're playing Empire State of Mind. And I'm like, I didn't even realize that song was as huge as it's become, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
That song. I know of that song, of course, but I was like, when did this become like one of the iconic New York songs? Okay. All right.
It's kind of become that way throughout the years. I mean, like, honestly, I've heard that a lot in like a lot of New York sporting events. They always play it at the end of the games. Any big event where, that takes place in New York, like New Year's Eve or whatever, like they play Empire State of Mind quite a bit. It's sort of become, it's slowly become like the new New York anthem. It's like that and, Sinatra's New York, New York.
Yeah, I guess we needed something else besides the Sinatra New York, New York, which only goes back to like the 70s.
Really?
That song was written for a film called New York, New York. And I think it was originally done by Liza Minnelli, maybe?
Oh,
and
Liza
Sinatra
with a Z?
Covered it.
Huh.
I think I have that right.
I don't know why. I've always thought that song was like from the 40s or 50s or something.
It seems like it should be, but let me see. I'm gonna Google. So yeah, it is a theme song to the Martin Scorsese musical New York, New York, which came out in 77. It was composed by John Kander, lyrics by Fred Ebb. Liza Minnelli performs the song during the finale of the film. It was nominated for the Golden Globe Award for Best Original Song. 2 years later, Sinatra covered the song, and it became a closely identified with both him and New York City. So the Sinatra association only goes back to 1979. That is wild.
That's crazy. I was around for that.
That's crazy pants. Yeah.
I always thought that song was like an old standard, like an old jazz standard.
I know. It seems like if you did a movie where like Sinatra was singing that song in the 50s or 40s, I would be like, yes, okay, that scans. But no, that song did not exist until 1977.
That song came out, like, that song was around when, like, Saturday Night Fever was around. Is that what you're telling me? The hell?
Yeah, that's wild, right?
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's like Saturday Night Fever, The Birth of Hip Hop, Sex Pistols, and Frank Sinatra, New York, New York, all around the same at times.
You could have been hearing this song at the same time as like Rapture by Blondie.
Fab Five Freddy. That is, wow. All right. See, ladies and gentlemen, on the SNL Nerds podcast, we entertain and we teach.
Yeah, we entertain and we educate, which is okay. But anyway, the reason we were talking about the New York Knicks, in case you are listening to this podcast and you didn't look at the movie we are covering this week, we decided to cover the movie Semi-Pro with Will Ferrell from 2008 because it is a basketball theme and it's her, somebody from SNL. We were like, hey, that works.
Yeah. So, we're doing a Semi-Pro directed by Kent Alterman, who I believe this is like the one and only movie he's directed, because he's kind of known for being more of a producer.
He like ran Comedy Central, apparently.
He was the president of Comedy Central in like 20...
From 2016 to 2019, he was the president of Comedy Central.
Yeah, and but before that, he was like an executive producer on Elf, A History of Violence, and Little Children. And then after...
That's a very eclectic
mix. It is! That's an insane... Yeah, I did Elf, and I did the one about the child molester. It's like, wait, what?
Sure, okay, yeah, all right.
Okay. Yeah, and then after he directed this movie, he just went back to doing production, and then, yeah, he ran Comedy Central, and like I said, left in 2019. But as far as I can find out, this is the only movie he's directed, which is interesting.
Yeah, kind of wild.
Yeah, and this was written by Scott Armstrong, who wrote Old School and Starsky and Hutch, two movies that we've talked about on this podcast. Movie came out February 29th, 2008, had a budget of $55 million, only grossed $43 million.
Oh, that's less. That is less. Let me just crunch the numbers. Yeah, 43.9 million. That is less than 55 million. So this did not do so
well. Yeah, like I remember this movie came out and it didn't really set the world on fire. And I can, after rewatching it, I can sort of understand why now.
Okay, did you see this film back in the day? I didn't. I missed it in theaters back in the day, probably because it was. It was out of theaters so quickly.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think if I saw it in the theaters. I don't remember. I know I definitely saw this movie before, but I don't remember if it was on video or in the theaters. But I kind of understand why it didn't do that hot, because it feels like a mashup of things we kind of already seen Will Ferrell do before at
this
point. Yes,
very much so. I had that in my notes. I was like, oh, so this is basically like Anchorman crossed with Talladega Nights.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it had the 70s feel of Anchorman, had the Will Ferrell playing a sports figure
like he did in Talladega Nights or in
Blades of Glory.
Skating movie. Yeah, Blades of Glory.
Yeah, and it's just loud, over the top. I mean, he plays it a little differently than those other characters, but not that much differently.
No, I mean, you know what you're getting. It's a Will Ferrell movie. It's a Will Ferrell sports comedy. By this point in his career, you kind of know what you're getting for your money.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, there's a few other things in this movie that we can talk about that, and I really didn't think worked that great, but there's
lots of things in this movie.
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be that nice. I don't think.
Good cop, bad cop.
I didn't like this movie much. I was like, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh well, this will be like a fair to middling Will Ferrell comedy, and no, it is not very funny. This movie.
Yeah, it has a lot of good people in it, so I don't know.
It's got an amazing amount of people in it. Okay, we got Will Ferrell, we got Woody Harrelson, we got Andre Benjamin, better known as Andre 3000.
Yeah.
Maura Tierney, who I love.
News Radio.
Will Arnett, David Koechner, Andy Richter, Tim Meadows pops up.
Andy Daly.
Matt Walsh.
Yeah.
Jackie Earl Haley. I mean, who else? Rob Corddry's in it.
Yeah.
just it's a, like an amazingly deep bench of comedy actors, and like I like these other movies that Scott Armstrong wrote. Like I think Starsky and Hutch is underrated, and what was the other one you said he wrote?
He was one of the writers on Old School.
And you know, I enjoy Old School, but this one, no, not so much.
All right, so let's talk it out. Try to figure out what the hell happened here.
Okay. I think it starts out strong. We start out with the song Love Me Sexy, which, as we quickly learn, like the opening sequence, it does set up the movie well, I think. We learn that Will Ferrell's character, Jackie Moon, he had this hit song in 1970 called Love Me Sexy. And then he uses the profits from that song to become the owner, player, and coach of the Flint Tropics basketball team. And this was back in the days of the American Basketball Association, the ABA.
Right. Which is, I mean, again, we're not sports guys. I kind of knew about the ABA, but I looked it up and
yeah.
I was like, it was kind of a rival to the NBA, but yeah. From the late 60s to the late 70s. And
like how you have the different football leagues, you have the NFL and the AFL, and they come together for the Super Bowl.
And then there's
I think it was kind of like that with the ABA and the NBA, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's some real life events do kind of, you know, take place in this movie.
Right.
You know, we'll get there when we get there. But yeah. So the movie starts off Flint, Michigan, 1976. Ferrell plays Jackie Moon, like you said, like owner, player, coach of this team, and he's like a real big kind of promoter. He like really likes. He really has a lot of love for this team, and he's always trying
lots
to get
of stunts. Yeah,
does a lot of stunts to get people
in. Like in the opening montage set to the Love Me Sexy song, we see at one point there's like a free gerbil night.
Nice. A free gerbil.
And, yeah. And, you know, so it's things like that in that level. And I did like the sight gag. You see him and he's posing for like the Burt Reynolds Cosmos Centerfold, but he's got like a basketball on his crotch.
Yeah, he's buck-ass naked.
Yeah. For the basketball. Yeah. So
just curly pubes and a basketball.
I mean, Will Ferrell, he's always willing to get naked for a joke.
Yes. So. God love him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So he does, you know, free dribble night to get people in, dime beer nights, which turns into an ugly as everybody just fights everybody.
Right.
Drunkenly. And we see the two announcers, Dick Pepperfield, played by Andy Daly.
Andy Daly. Another great person in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Lou Redwood, played by Arnett. And they announce the players to come on the team.
The players are unfortunately using the R slur, which makes like 2008 feel like a million years ago.
Yeah. But it takes place in the 70s when that was okay.
I mean, that word was still being bandied around as recently as 2008, because I remember also hearing it in Tropic Thunder, so.
Yeah.
Oof. But it's like, oh, no, yeah, you shouldn't be doing this. even if you're doing it ironically, you shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. We got Matt Walsh here as the referee, Father Pat.
Yeah. He's a referee, and he's a priest, and they don't really do much with that.
Not really.
It's just kind of a thing. I mean, but it's not really a thing.
Why make him a priest or a preacher if you're not gonna?
Yeah, so he's wearing a referee shirt over, you know, a clerical collar, and it seems like it's a setup for something, but no, they don't really do anything. So it just seems like this incidental character detail that doesn't amount to anything.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I think that is the start of us saying, like, figuring out why this movie doesn't entirely work, because it's stuff like that. There are things that are like sort of setups for jokes, but they never really evolve into jokes.
Exactly. Yeah. And also it felt like a lot of stuff got cut out of this film. I don't know why it didn't.
Probably are a mess of deleted scenes. Yeah. Maybe there's a better edit of this movie somewhere.
Yeah. Maybe
every shot. Who knows?
Yeah. So
I just watched it on streaming. So all I have to go on is what I saw on Amazon Prime. So
indeed,
you watch it on DVD from your library, you said. So are there any deleted scenes on the DVD you got?
No, I didn't see any actually. Like, I'll go back and check, but I don't think.
Okay, well then, fuck him.
Yeah, fuck you. So one of the stunts that Jackie has is he will give $10,000 away to anybody who could do a free throw shot from across the court, and right. The person that comes down to do is this guy who calls himself Dukes, played by mm-hmm. Jack Earl Haley. He's like kind of long hair, shirtless, you know, but he kind of nods off. He might be on the junk.
Yeah.
So you know, they give him the basketball and he actually makes the shot, and Jackie.
He makes a free throw shot from like the other side of the court.
Yeah,
it's not just from like half court; it's from like way ass back, and he makes it. And then Jackie Moon kind of confesses to somebody, like, "Oh, I don't actually have the money to pay him. This was just a stunt. He wasn't supposed to make the basket."
Yeah, so he plays it off. He's like, "Oh, you've won this giant check for $10,000." So
right,
instead of giving him the money, he gives the guy like a giant novelty check for $10,000.
Right. And this becomes kind of a runner through the film. We see Dukes pop up periodically and he's like, "Oh no, I can't deposit this in my bank." And he's like, "Oh no, you should go to the giant check cashing bank. That's what I'd do if I were you.
Go to a bigger bank."
Yeah.
Let's go to a bigger bank.
And we randomly in these opening scenes, we see Jason Sudeikis in the crowd. He's like eating nachos.
Yeah, he just plays like a random fan who's eating nachos, but it's nachos he bought from home, and
yeah,
Jackie gets upset with him because he's like, "Oh, I'm trying to sell nachos here. What are you bringing food from home for?" And he's like,
"Yeah."
And it's like,
and the crowd's, you know, like the stadium is not even half full.
It's barely, yeah.
Yeah, so the Flint Tropics are not doing very well. And honestly. Yeah, and it's so weird, like, you know, Sudeikis never comes back in the movie. It's just, it feels like he was visiting the set one day, and they were like, "Hey, Jason Sudeikis, do you want a cameo in the movie?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, I'm not doing anything, why not?"
"I got some time to kill, sure."
"All right, great, here are these nachos, you're eating nachos, we'll do some improv around some nachos."
And go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't really kind of go anywhere. But yeah, so Jackie, he's this guy who loves his team, but, you know, they're losing money, they're about to go bankrupt. Their team is not very good. The best player they have is Clarence, played by Andre 3K.
Right.
Who's always talking about.
Oh, is that how we're calling him?
That's how we call him in the streets, baby.
Okay. All right. So here's another thing. Okay. His. Andre 3K's character, his given name is Clarence, but he also goes by Downtown. And then at some point, like halfway, three quarters of the way into the movie, he decides he's changing his name. What did he change his name to?
Coffee Black.
Coffee Black. And it's not really a gag. It's just a thing that happens. He changes his name. And I don't think he changes his name again. It might be funny if like he was changing his name every scene that we see him in. But no, he just changes his name halfway through. And it's like, why are you doing this?
I don't know. I mean, they mentioned before he had other different names because they call him Downtown in the beginning. Right. And then they say like he called himself some other names, like, you know, Dr. Funk or whatever, or, you know, Funkenstein or.
Okay. So we're doing like a Dr. Johnny Fever type of thing here.
I think so. He gave himself a bunch of other nicknames, but it's just like a thing that they mentioned. It doesn't really kind of lead anywhere.
But it would be so much funnier if he was like doing that throughout the film rather than just him mentioning him having done that a bunch of times. Like, show, don't tell, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So after the game, the players are just kind of licking their wounds, having drinks. You know, they know their team sucks and they hear the whole league is kind of about to go under. But Jackie tells him, "Don't worry, you know, keep this under your hat, but I'm going to drive to Indianapolis for a meeting about a possible merger with the NBA.
Right.
So next day he drives to talk to the commissioner, played by David Koechner.
Yeah. And it's kind of a straight role for David Koechner. He's not really as exaggerated or cartoonish as he is in, like, say, Anchorman.
Yeah. I mean, he gets a little loud and blustery. Like a little champ kindish, a little bit, but not.
I don't know, but by David Koechner standards, he's playing it pretty straight.
By Koechner standards, he's he's dialed it down quite a bit.
Yeah. And like at this meeting, Koechner announces as the ABA commissioner, he says, okay, so the Nets, the Spurs, the Pacers, and the Nuggets, they are all going to be playing in the NBA next season, and the rest of the league will dissolve. And Jackie Moon says, like, hey, no, let's not do that. It should be the best four performing teams. The best four teams should go into the NBA. It shouldn't just be those four random teams.
Right. And he gets all the other team owners on his side about it because they're ready to take the money. But they're like, no, the season's not over yet. It should be the best four teams. Oh, and a little bit of history here. So when he mentions that the four teams that will be part of the NBA, the Nets, Spurs, Pacers, and Nuggets, those were the two ABA teams that were taken into the NBA back in the...
Wait, you said two. Don't you mean four?
Four. I don't know numbers.
Okay.
I'm in a closet. It's hot. But yes, those were the four teams from the ABA that were ingested into the NBA.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's a great premise for a sports comedy is, we got this team from the ABA. The ABA is going away. They want to prove themselves. So they have to get into the top four. So they don't have to finish the season at number one. If they can finish the season at number four or above, then they're going to have their shot to get into the NBA and keep the team going.
Okay, we got our stakes. Yeah, we got our stakes.
Yeah, exactly. So to bring the Tropics up in the stats, because they're I think the last place team at this point, the last ranked team.
Yeah, they stink.
He makes a trade. He trades for a new player, Ed Monix, played by Woody Harrelson, and he actually trades him for a washing machine.
Which tells you all you need to know about Ed Monix at his where he's at. Like
it also tells you a bit about Jackie Moon too. So
yeah, that's true. Exactly.
That's probably one of the funnier gags.
That's a funny gag. Yeah,
in the movie. Yeah,
you got it for a washing machine. Like the team isn't too wild about him. They know about Monix and his reputation. Like they've all gotten into fights with him, and he's a drinker, and he's kind of a pretty much a has been. But he does have a NBA championship ring. So
Because he was on the Celtics, I think it was.
Yes,
When they took it all. Yeah, so he wears the ring as a neck, like on a necklace.
Right.
But it emerges later in the film that he was sitting on the bench the whole season. So he didn't actually play in the championship team. But because he was part of the team, he still got.
Still got the ring. Yeah, like that's something Clarence kind of digs at him for. Yeah. There's like a little bit of tension between Monix and Clarence, but again, that's something that doesn't really, that kind of goes away pretty quickly.
It doesn't pay off in a big way. Yeah, they try to pay it off at the end, but it doesn't. It's weird. So much in this movie, it's like set up but no real payoff.
Yeah, and so Jackie says, "Hey, welcome to the team, there, Monix. So if you see a possum, just try to kill it. It's not a pet."
Yeah. Funny line.
And then we go to what I think is the part of the movie that didn't really work for me at all. It's where Monix goes to see his old flame, Lynn, played by Maura Tierney, who is shacked up with this guy, Kyle, played by Rob Corddry.
Yeah. It doesn't really work. I mean, first of all, I don't think Woody Harrelson and Maura Tierney had any particular chemistry together. So,
not really, no.
So it's not like you're rooting for them to get back together. You're just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess this is his old girlfriend. Well, all right.
Yeah, he comes back and is like, hey, what if I told you I came back here to see you? And, she kind of, scoffs him off. Of course, Monix knows that she's with, they never say if they're married or not, but like.
No, they're very vague about it. It's Rob Corddry and, again, I like Rob Corddry. Loved him in Hot Tub Time Machine. I thought he was hilarious in that, in particular.
He's kind of wasted in this role. Like he plays somebody who's like a huge fan of Ed Monix, and he's, he'll just do whatever he wants him to do because he's just like, really likes him. And even though he sees that, Ed Monix is trying to win his wife back, he's like not jealous at all. He's actually like.
Yeah, honored. He's like, oh, you're so awesome. Yeah, you do whatever you want. And they do give you a payoff for that later on in the movie, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, then we have the scene with the poker game with Jackie Moon and mm-hmm. Andy Richter. I think we forgot to mention he's in this movie, too.
Andy Richter, I mentioned him in passing. Yeah, he's... what is he? Is he like one of the announcers?
Or... I don't know. I think
he's there. He's occasionally getting on a microphone and it's vague. Is this something we would know if we were more bigger basketball fans? I don't know.
I think he's just like Jackie's assistant.
Okay.
He kind of is like his guy Friday in a way.
Yeah. I'm looking on the cast list okay, he's the general manager for the Tropics.
Oh, okay. Whoops.
Okay. So he's below Will Ferrell because Will Ferrell's the owner, player, coach, and Andy Richter's the general manager.
Oh, okay. So, all right. GM. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. And Andy Daly and Will Arnett are the play-by-play announcer and the color commentator for the Tropics. Yes, I don't know what the distinction is between those two things, but you know they're both guys on microphones reporting on the game.
Yeah, they announced the game while smoking and drinking.
Yeah, and because of the 70s.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
also, according to this cast list, Rob Corddry is just Lynn's boyfriend, not her husband.
Oh.
He is a diehard fan of Monix.
Okay, so that's... All right, yep. That makes sense. Okay, and here we have Tim Meadows, who plays like somebody who has always wanted to be on the Tropics, but he's not athletic at all, and we see him with the cast on his arm.
And again, he only shows up in this one scene.
Yeah.
And then just disappears for the rest of the movie. It's just Tim Meadows, he's on, he's funny in the scene, he's with what he's given to do, and then he just fucks off for the rest of the film.
Yeah, it's weird. Kind of, yeah, and this is where we get the scene where they kind of play with a load, end up playing with a gun that they think is unloaded, but it actually is loaded, and it ends up shooting Tim Meadows in the arm.
Yeah, well, Will Arnett is very offended when Tim Meadows calls him a jive turkey.
That's right.
And then he starts like swinging his gun around, his pistol around, and then it's like, oh, relax, this isn't loaded. And then everybody on the table has to grab the gun and do a little bit of do a mock insult and then pretend to shoot somebody. And this scene just goes on forever, man. It really meanders.
Yeah. I'm trying to think why this doesn't pop. Like, everybody in this scene is funny, so why doesn't...
Yeah, so many funny people. I mean, we got Will Ferrell, we got Andy Richter, we got Tim Meadows, we got Andy Daly, we got Will Arnett. I mean, there's some very, very funny people in there.
On paper, this should work. Why doesn't it work? Answer me, John!
I don't know. I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, this scene really meanders. I feel like, you know, it's like this movie's equivalent of the poker scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm.
And that scene, that sets up the whole rest of the movie, because it's a scene where the guys, they find out that Steve Carell is actually a virgin, a 40-Year-Old virgin. So that's an important pivotal scene in the movie, and this... It's not really, it doesn't matter much because we've already decided about the ABA and them trying to go the whole season. So it's not really important plot wise. Maybe that's the problem.
You know how not important this scene was, John?
Yeah.
So I was, like you said, I was watching this on my a DVD I got from the library. And when this scene came up, it was like, I guess the DVD was like scratchy or something, so it was kind of like cutting over it or in and out. Like I was
kind of skipping ahead.
Yeah, I was kind of frozen, and like I was trying to replay it, but I couldn't. So I was like, all right, let me just fast forward through this. Maybe that'll work. And it did work, and I was able to watch the rest of it, but I didn't see a lot of that scene, and so it feels like I didn't really miss much of anything. So
you didn't feel the need to like look up that scene on YouTube because you weren't understanding anything later on in the movie or anything like that.
Nope. It seems like I missed that scene. I didn't miss anything at all.
Yeah, my notes are just like poker scene really meanders, and then Arnett offended when Tim Meadows calls him a jive turkey.
Yeah.
And I don't think anything really important happens plot wise. So
yeah. Fair enough. So yeah, so we get a road game. We get the team going to St. Louis to play some basketball. And let me see what I wrote here.
Yeah, I mean, this is where we kind of introduce the Clarence Monix rivalry, and Clarence is given. Andre Benjamin is giving Woody Harrelson grief because he's like, you sat through every playoff game. You don't deserve to wear that ring. And we also find out Jackie Moon's, one of his philosophies is ELE, everybody love everybody.
Yeah.
Because he wants everybody to get along at all times.
Yeah. Everybody love everybody.
Yeah. So he's trying to just kind of squash any conflict before it comes up.
Yes. But then he'll tell Father Pat to S my C, I'll murder your family. But that comes later.
Yeah, yeah. And we also find out somewhere around here that they have to get 2,000 fans per home game. They really have to boost their ticket sales.
If
they want to make it to the NBA, because it's got to be, you know, these teams have to be popular. They have to have a following and all that. And that makes sense. So they start to do stunts. Jackie Moon decides, oh, we're all going to start to wear eyeliner during our games.
Yeah, for the TV camera, so their eyes can pop.
Okay, that was the rationale. But then they learn very quickly that it starts to run when they sweat and it burns their eyes.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of funny idea, but it's not really big enough to be a funny stunt, you know?
Yeah, it's not quite.
It's more like mildly amusing than anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. I mean, if they're gonna
seeing Will Ferrell and the other guys with like runny mascara. It's not that funny of a visual, you know.
It's really not. Like just describing it doesn't even sound that funny.
No, it's just like, oh yeah, that's the thing that happened. So it's I mean, I wish they'd gone further with it, where it was like, oh yeah, we started with a little eyeliner to bring out our eyes, and then we went on like, you know, full makeup. And if they were like wearing full,
like yeah, lip
makeup, like lipstick and rouge and blush and
So that's something. There you go. See, John, you did it. You made it better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm rewriting this movie 18 years after the fact.
There you go. Better late than never, I say.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also as they're playing a game. Monix kind of gets into it with another player who's being like a big old jerk. I think the guy from like Mad TV, the guy Peretti, I believe his name is. But Jackie doesn't want any of them to fight in front of the cameras because the commissioner could be watching.
Right. So they do cut to David Koechner like watching at home with his wife.
Yeah. So they fight during the commercial breaks.
I do like the idea of them having a full-out brawl during the commercial break, and then as soon as they come back, everybody just pretends that nothing weird has been happening. And both teams just kind of instantly go back to... Yeah, that's a funny idea. Again, they could have taken it a little further.
Like gone the full Bad News Bear slapshot route.
Yeah. Like, let's see them, like, bleeding. Let's see somebody with, like, a broken limb or something.
Yeah. Break some bones. Come on. I want blood.
Yeah.
I want fatalities.
Yeah.
So I think like halfway through the game that they kind of go into the locker room, and you know, Jackie's kind of happy that the team loved the fights because he likes to boost up morale, but Monix is like, we need basketball. We need a team. We need a plan here. We're like, we need a game plan. We are lost. You're just all about boosting morale. You're not worried about teaching these guys like the fundamentals or like anything like that.
Right. Yeah. We've got to get better as a team. We've got to play better. We've got to have more plans and plays and that sort of thing. And Jackie Moon's like, I'm not really an X's and O's kind of guy.
Yeah.
So he's not really running the team like a business. He's running it like a very expensive toy, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. And then Monix gets into it with Clarence about him riding the bench. And then Monix just kind of tells him off, saying like how he's pissing away his future. You never learn how to play actual basketball, even though you got talent. And then he just Then he storms off and he kicks in a cop car window and immediately gets arrested.
Right.
Jesus.
And his ex-girlfriend Lynn bails Monix out of jail. And he's there in his Tropics uniform. Mm-hmm. And after he after she bails him out, he like apologizes for cheating on her.
Yeah.
And I think she says like, "Oh yeah, you cheated on me twice." And he's like, "No, it was just once, but it was with two women."
I'm joking, baby. Come on now. I was just playing.
I'm not really invested in the subplot at all.
I'm really not. Like, they really kind of force it together. Force these two guys together. It's like, oh, there's this relationship it's just not there. Like,
I like Woody Harrelson as an actor. I like Maura Tierney as an actor. But I'm never at any point like rooting for those characters to get together.
No.
I never feel like, oh yeah, these two are good for each other. Like he brings out something good in her, she brings out something good in him. You never get that sense. It's just sort of like, oh yeah, I guess they used to date, and I guess they're going to be dating again. All right, that's okay.
Yeah,
and it's not like, and Rob Corddry is such an amiable guy because he's like this super fan of Monix. You don't really dislike the guy. He's not like an asshole. He just seems kind of oblivious.
Yeah, there's no real tension or conflict. And yeah, then like Monix is making the moves on her again and she's kind of falling in for him again. It's like, that felt really quick. Like a guy that like, you know, broke up with you and left your life. And now it's the moment he says like, hey, let's get back together. You're kind of falling back to old patterns like that quickly.
It's a very wishy-washy subplot.
Very much so.
Yeah. It's perplexing in how half-assed this romance subplot is.
Yeah. It insists upon itself.
Yes. Okay, so the players come to Monix and they say, like, hey, you've got to coach the team. And, you know, because Jackie just ain't doing it. We're not going to get anywhere with him coaching us.
Yeah.
And so they decide that Monix will be the offensive defensive coordinator, and Jackie Moon will still be the head coach. I guess that's just so Jackie can kind of save face.
Yeah, because he is good at being a promoter. He is good at like kind of getting people riled up and whatnot.
Well, yeah, I mean, he comes up with stunts. That's his real thing. And Monix is going to be more of a hard ass with the team. He like forces the team to run the court until everybody pukes. And then we have a not terribly funny scene where Will Ferrell confesses that he's never actually puked in his life. Even when he was a baby, he didn't puke.
Yeah. And then, so then Monix off says, oh, you never been punched in the jejun?
Yeah.
And then he punches him in the jejun, which is a part of the small intestine, I guess. And then he hits
him
so hard.
He punches him in the stomach. Not the funniest. Yeah, I mean, knee him in the balls or something. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. That's always hilarious. And yeah, and then like Will Ferrell kind of does this motion where he's about to throw up and about to throw up. And when he does throw up, we don't see it to throw up because the camera pulls back and cuts away to something else. But we're told he throws up. So we don't.
Is one interesting bit of trivia that I did read about this film. It says in the film, Jackie Moon says that he has never vomited before, not even as a baby. In reality, Will Ferrell suffered from pyloric stenosis, a condition that causes frequent vomiting as a baby. A scar on his upper right abdomen from the surgery he had to treat this condition appears in this and many other films. And I remember seeing that scar in Blades of Glory. Like at one point he's like just lounging around in the kitchen and he's like, yeah, drink it all in. and you're just like, what is that going on around his midsection? Apparently it's a scar from that surgery. So
when he was a baby, he threw up too much.
It says frequent vomiting, yes. Yeah. Enough that it is a medical condition. So, yeah.
Wow.
Glad he got that fixed.
Glad we nipped that in the bud.
Yeah, that sounds like a scary thing for your to be happening to your baby.
That sounds some nasty business.
Yeah.
Oof. But yeah, like in this movie, like he, you know, he talks about how he's never thrown up. And when he does finally throw up, we don't see it. So it's like, it's
And it's not particularly relevant to the plot that he does throw up. He doesn't throw up at a climactic moment in a game or something like that. He doesn't like sabotage the team's chances because he threw up at the wrong time or anything.
Yeah, it's just like another
thing. It's just this arbitrary thing that happens in the game. So, yeah, we're not really building the stakes at all.
Yeah, not really.
I mean, even the fact that they're like, oh, we just have to finish in fourth place. Well, that doesn't really, you know, like, that doesn't really juice me as an audience member. It's like, oh, you have to make it to fourth place. That doesn't sound that hard.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about sports, but like, I feel like fourth place is it's doable.
That seems very respectable.
Yeah. So the next game comes up and the team does well. This is the one where there's a free corn dog night and he gets freaked out that like he tries to, Jackie says like after we get over 125 points, everybody in the stadium gets a free corn dog. Right. But he's worried because the team's doing so well that they might actually get over 125 points.
Right. So he's like, we have to win, but we can't win by too much. We have to win so that we can advance as a team, but if we score over 125 points, we have to give everybody in the stadium a free corn dog, and I don't have that. I didn't make any preparation for that. It's like the free throw shot from early in the film. He just like did the promotion, and he didn't think of like, oh, how do I actually follow through with this promotion?
That's right. He learned nothing from the free throw shot fiasco.
Yeah. So we do see him, Jackie, tackling one of his own players so that they don't score 126 points. And it's like the guy he tackles is like doesn't really speak English, so he didn't really understand this.
Oh, right. He's their player from like, what, Yugoslavia or something like that?
Yeah, Russia, Yugoslavia, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, even I feel like they should have done more with his character. Like the fact that he's doesn't really speak English, like I felt like.
Nobody on the team is especially developed except for Jackie Moon, Woody Harrelson, and Andre Benjamin. So
yeah, the three people on the cover of the movie poster.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, of course, those three are going to be the first among equals. But, yeah, we only get a vague sense of the other guys on the team. So
yeah, they're all just, you know, Afro number one, Afro number two.
They're there. And, you know, like a few white guys floating around. You're just like... Oh, yeah, there's that white guy who's got kind of a bowl cut.
Yeah.
I wonder what his deal is. Okay, well.
Seems to be doing all right. They get over 125 points, and he has to give everybody free corn dogs, so he just, like, makes a break for it and runs out the stadium.
Right. And that's it.
The end. Yeah, that's how that resolves.
And we get like, the sports montage, because we're at the sort of midpoint of the movie, The Tropics, they move out of last place. They win five games in a row. So they're doing better and better and better. And let's see. At this point in my notes, I have, this movie is remarkably unfunny.
Yeah, it really is. Then we get to the point where, I think you mentioned, where Monix goes to Lynn. And then he asks her to marry him. And even though she's like, oh, we haven't been on any dates and have a boyfriend and you're just asking me to marry you.
Yeah. And again, it feels very arbitrary.
Yeah. It's like, it felt like there should have been more scenes with them slowly rekindling their romance or like, you know, reigniting the spark.
Yeah, but you never feel a spark between them. So
no,
it's really,
never do.
And then we cut to this utterly strange scene where they are having sex on the couch. So Lynn is like just sort of, you know, on top of Monix. And then Rob Corddry's character comes home and he realizes he walks in on them having sex. And he's such a big fan of Monix. He's just like, hey, all right. Okay. My girl's sleeping with my favorite sports star. And he just kind of sits down to watch.
Yeah. Like cuck style.
Yeah, and then he's enjoying it so much, he actually, like, really starts enjoying it.
Then Monix gets freaked out, like, hey, that's not cool, man. And it's like, Monix, you're sleeping with another man's girlfriend. That's not cool either.
And it's, It's so extreme. It should be funnier than it is, but it just doesn't work. I don't know. I just kind of felt sorry. I was like, oh, you made Maura Tierney and Woody Harrelson do this, did you?
Yeah.
Why'd you make them do this movie? I feel bad for them.
Oh, movie, why'd you do that movie? Yeah, it just doesn't. Again, it's like this. I don't know. I felt that whole subplot with Monix and Lynn, I just don't think worked.
Trying to go there with the Rob Corddry thing. I mean, they're really trying to go there. I mean, it's the germ of a funny idea. It's like he's such a big fan that he doesn't mind him seducing his girl, but
yeah,
wow, but it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. It does not. Yeah. But anyway, back to the team. They're doing well. They're doing better. At one point, the GM, Andy Richter, tells Jackie that the commissioner is coming to Flint. So they need to, like, a big stunt to get a ton of people in the stadium. So Jackie goes on a talk show, tells him that, you know, they're two wins away from getting his team into the NBA. And to get attendance up, that he will wrestle a bear.
Yeah. We also, I think shortly before this, we see him a stunt where he's like jumping over 47 feet of ball girls on a motorcycle.
That happens too. There's a lot of crazy stunting he does in this.
Yeah.
All the stunts.
And the ball girls are basically like just women in bikinis.
Yes, very much so. Hey.
Dancing around. So it's exaggerated, but it's not really exaggerated to like a really funny comedic level. It's just sort of mildly exaggerated from reality, it feels like.
Yeah, it never kind of, I don't know, escalates.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not embellished to the point of hilarity. It's just kind of embellished to the point of, oh, okay.
Very strangely, because, like, you know, Anchorman goes out there.
It does.
Like, other Will Ferrell comedies get out there. Like, I mean, I think Talladega Nights got really out there.
It got out there. We got to do that.
From what I remember, the campaign went really out there, but
yeah, we got to do that movie too.
Yeah, this one only just sort of mildly goes out there.
Yeah, so. I do like Will Ferrell's afro though. I think his afro looks pretty cool.
I mean, his hair game's usually pretty good in these movies.
His hair is perfect.
Yeah. So Jackie Moon pledges to wrestle a bear. And we get a whole extensive scene of him wrestling a bear. And we get a cameo from Kristen Wiig as the bear wrangler.
Right. She'd been working with the bear for about a day or so. But she worked for cats for like 12 years. So she's very familiar with animals.
Right. Right.
That gave me a chuckle.
And the bear escapes?
Yeah, because like basically he's like kind of playing with the bear. But it's like a smallish bear. So it doesn't do much, so he gets more and more confident, so he kind of like you know, smacks the bear around a little bit, and then the bear just straight up mauls him. Then the Andy Richter goes in to save him. The bear pushes Andy to the side and leaves the cage and is just walking around the arena, and like, yeah, they basically let a live bear loose into a stadium.
Right, and they're advising everyone to flee in panic, and people are running away. We see like some people in wheelchairs wheeling,
right?
Out, you know, trying to clear. Here's a problem: I watched this movie like less than 24 hours ago. I still only vaguely remember this scene.
Really?
This should be like one of the comedic highlights of the movie, and it somehow just doesn't. Yeah.
I mean, I remember...
It's not as funny as it should be, somehow.
Yeah,
and I can't entirely put my finger on what exactly is wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny when Jackie was screaming, "No refunds! No refunds!"
Yeah.
As the whole melee of people run around. And then the commissioner, David Kessner, just kind of casually strolls in to the arena as if pandemonium isn't happening around him.
Right.
And then they just cut to another scene where the commissioner is like, "Oh, I need to talk to Jackie and the rest of your team."
Right. And they say like, "Oh, you know, here's the problem is Flint is not enough of a big media market to make it to the NBA."
Right.
Which makes sense because Flint isn't one of those big cities. You know, it's like Michael Moore is going to make a movie about you in like about 15 years. And
until then,
things are not looking good. And,
but yeah,
enjoy that drinking water while you can.
Oh, damn. Too soon. Too soon.
But yeah. I am a sucker for like people in movies like inexplicably knowing the future.
Yeah.
You remember in the Starsky and Hutch movie where Patton Oswalt plays a DJ and he like just has knowledge of the future and it's never explained? Where Ben Stiller is like doing the dances and he's like, oh, all the way from the future of the 1980s, he's doing the moonwalk and you know, stuff like that. And it's like, I love that. I love nice. That like people in period movies have knowledge of the future. We could have done some of that.
Could have done some of that. I feel like they did at one point. Like there was,
did they?
Okay. There was one point where the announcers, Andy Daly and Will Arnett, are talking. Yeah, and then they're talking about things that scare them. I think Will Arnett said Andy Daly was scared of like the youngest Jackson 5
member. Yes, he does. He does say like the youngest member of the Jackson 5 is very creepy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, mark my word, there's something creepy about him. And so I thought that was like a gentle nod of like knowing
the future. What year did Michael Jackson die? Like 2009 or so?
Ooh. Was it 09?
I want to say 09.
As a black man, I should know this.
Let's see. Yep, June 2009. Boom. Nailed it.
Damn, son.
All right,
homie. You got that. Okay.
All right. I knew it. The black man didn't. Just knowing that for the record.
All right, fine. You are
deaf. Have you seen that Michael Jackson biopic, by the way?
No. I've heard too many people say it's like a big fluff piece.
Yeah, like, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
I think it stops in like 88 before, you know, any of the scandals
before
break. So.
Yeah, like I think I think it goes up to bad or maybe even before bad. But yeah, like you know, all the, it basically, whatever the Jackson family wants you to know and wants you to hear, that's in this movie. All the other tabloidy stuff.
It's doing very well for itself, so I guess that's what people want to see. So
people want to hear the story they want to hear.
Yeah, when they just want to hear the reassuring legend, not any hint of the actual truth.
Yeah, and so it goes,
Anyway, yeah, something creepy about that Jackson kid. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the expansion committee had an emergency meeting, and Flint wasn't a big enough media market. So no matter what they do. Flint Tropics is getting the axe.
They are not going to be one of the teams that moves on to the NBA, even if they like finish the season first.
Right.
So yeah.
So it's all for naught.
Yeah. And around this point in the movie, Jackie also confesses that he stole the song "Love Me Sexy" from his mom before she died.
Yeah, they mention a couple times in the movie like how Jackie really loved his mom who's passed away. And like it kind of leads to something at the very end of the film, but it's not a huge thing.
Well, also it's like, okay, he confesses that he stole the song from his mom before she died. And I'm just like, I was like, honestly, is that that bad? I mean, she was dead. She wasn't going to do anything with the song. So why the hell can't you do?
Yeah,
why the hell can't you make that ad song?
Yeah. Put a dedication in. You're good.
I was just like, I don't get why that's such a horrible thing for him to have done. Is that bad of me?
I don't know, man. You're good. You can't take a dead person's work and claim it as your own? No?
Well, I don't know. I heard that and I was just like, yeah, why is that so horrible? I don't get.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's not like he's like actually cheating his mom out of money because like his mom is dead and he presumably is his mother's heir, so.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
no court could convince you. Yeah, right. Your Honor, my mom.
I mean, it's just the song that's just sitting there. He knows about it. She's gone. Yeah.
Okay, I've heard enough.
Take your love me sexy song.
Your Honor, please. But yeah, so, you know, yeah, Jackie and the rest of the team, this is their lowest point. They can't do anything. They're all bummed. Next game will be their last. Jackie traded Clarence to the Spurs. Which is something they just mentioned. And
this is a point where he switches his name to Coffee Black.
for unknown reasons.
Yeah, and here on Wikipedia, it runs down his names. It says he's Clarence Withers, a.k.a. Sugar Dunkerton, a.k.a. Downtown Funky Stuff Malone, a.k.a. Coffee Black. And I don't know, that gag didn't really work for me because it's like, it can be tough for me to get like one character name down, but when you're hitting me with like four or five, I don't know, it's a lot.
Yeah, and also like Sugar Dunkington, that's kind of a joke name. The second one, Downtown, that's kind of a joke. And Coffee Black isn't that much of a joke nickname.
Coffee Black is really an absurd enough name to, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Downtown Funky Stuff Malone, yeah, that's...
That's absurd, yeah.
That's absurd. Coffee Black is just like, okay, I could see an NBA player calling himself that.
Yeah, that sounds like a blaxploitation film.
Yeah, like...
All y'all jive turkeys better let... Watch out for Coffee Black, baby. How did you change
his name to a symbol like Prince or something?
You know? Yeah.
but he's doing it in like 1976, like 20 years before Prince did it.
Yeah, like a Ghostbusters symbol with like an umlaut over it or something.
Right. So didn't it eventually come out that like Prince was only doing that to get out of his record contract?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. He couldn't admit it at the time because, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a rough time for Prince.
That story's wild.
So wild. So we see all the team's members are kind of bummed, trying to figure out their lives. The GM, Andy Rick, is walking down the street, gets attacked by a bear. Right. Do we see Clarence and Monix at a bar kind of reconciling?
Sorry where I was madly unpleasant to you before. I was mildly unpleasant to you before.
Man, you're all right.
I mean, that's what their feud match do. It's just,
yeah, like I feel like
I don't think they ever come to blows or anything like that.
No, it's just like they blow up at each other once, and then it's all good.
It's like, hey, you were on the bench the whole season. You don't deserve that ring.
Why okay.
You?
I'll give you a knuckle sandwich there, kiddo.
Yeah.
Then Monix finds Jackie lying in a dumpster, tells him thanks for helping him find basketball again.
Mm-hmm.
They call the entire team for a meeting just for like one big final goodbye. Monix gives one big speech, saying, hey, we made it our mission to make it to fourth place. We can still do it. This will be like the last real game of basketball any of us are ever going to play. So let's do this for us. Let's get to fourth place. Hoorah. Let's make it happen, Cap'n. And then he gets the people going. Then we cut to like a press conference scene where Jackie tells reporters that they're going to play the Spurs for the Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl, which they never quite explain what is that. Well, I mean, it's like a big trophy.
He has a line where he's like, oh, there are going to be like three notable things in history. And it's like this, and Mega Bowl.
Yeah. We see Ed Helms pop up as one of the reporters.
Ed Helms randomly pops up. Yep.
So there's that. And then we get to the final game. Tropics against the Spurs. Spurs are dominating in the first half. The Spurs coach, played by Ian Roberts, one of the founders of the UCB. He wants to put Clarence in.
Another random comedy person, like, popping up for one scene or two.
Yeah, but he doesn't have any funny scenes. He's, like, he's playing it straight.
But
he wants Clarence to go in, but Clarence says, oh, I can't do it. I got back spasms. I got bone spurs.
Yeah.
There's one cool scene I liked where they cut to the crowd, and they show Dukes again with the sign saying, I want my money. As he's like nodding off to himself in the audience.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's a cute little visual gag. So first half, the team is doing super poorly. They suck. And at one point, Petrelli, the mean rival basketball player, who's the guy from Mad TV, whose name escapes me, he knocks out Jackie, like to the point that he has to be carried off the court.
Yeah, Jackie's injured.
Yeah, but they don't have a stretcher because Jackie sold it, so the players have to carry him off.
Right.
And
as they're carrying him off, the play-by-play announcer Andy Daly is saying, like, oh, yeah, they're doing a very bad job of keeping him immobile.
Yeah, his body's moving all over the place. Yeah, Clarence sees this and he abandons the Spurs because he has to go to his team.
Right. So he's like, I'm going to walk over to the tropics. You guys are going to lose to the Knicks in 2026 anyway.
Yeah.
So nobody cares. Nobody likes you.
Yeah.
Stupid San Antonio Spurs.
Stupid Spurs. Puh, Spurs, whatever. It's not even the coolest part of a...
Spurs, what are you? Yeah. Ooh, your decorations on boots. Okay.
It's not even the coolest part of a Cowboys uniform.
Right.
It's all about the chaps. We all know that.
It's all about the chaps, baby.
It's all about them chaps, baby. Come on.
So while Jackie's injured, he like has this vision of his mother in heaven, and she forgives him for the whole song thing, which in my opinion wasn't all that big of a deal to begin with.
And we should also mention Jackie Moon's mom, Patti LaBelle.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes.
His mom's Patti LaBelle.
Yeah. Is there any sort of setup to that, to his mom being Patti LaBelle? We don't, like, see a picture of her beforehand or anything.
No.
They don't really make any reference to Jackie Moon being biracial, do they?
No. I mean, he has the afro, so maybe that's it? Oh.
Okay. But yeah, but it was, like, 1976. Lots of dudes had fro-type hairstyles.
He had a good sense of style. Maybe that's it, you know.
Okay, all right.
No, dresser.
I was just like, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's okay.
I think that was just like a big
gag. Did they
say
his mom was black? I don't remember them saying that, but
yeah, no,
I think
no.
They're tuning out by this point.
Yeah, no, I don't think they did because it's funnier just to, you know, just to have his mom there and be like, oh, is that Lady Marmalade? Yeah. What the fuck is this?
I guess they were just going for the shock value. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
His mom's a black lady. That's crazy.
What?
What? Say what?
What will they think of next?
Yeah, so the mom tells him something that he should repeat to the team. Right. He wakes up. Clarence is with them, you know, and Jackie says, hey, my mom told me this about this thing called the alley-oop. And if we use it in the game, we're going to win. So the team is like, all right, let's do this alley-oop thing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, for those that would know the alley-oop, it's a move basically where a player tosses a basketball to another player. The player jumps in the air, slam dunks, bam, the basketball through the hoop, which is something we see quite a bit now, but back in the 70s.
Revolutionary.
Yeah. Like to the point
so it's
where
just like you toss the ball up and then somebody else like gets in and takes it home.
So the first time they do it, the entire audience goes silent. No one understands what they saw. Everyone's like, "What? Wait, what was that?" I guess they scored 2 points. I guess.
Yeah, there's actually a debate about it. The ref at first he declares 2 fouls. Because I think he says like, "Oh, you were traveling," and he was like, "No! I kept it to a step and a half." And then they persuade the ref, and then the ref, Matt Walsh, Father Pat, the ref, ultimately gives them 2 points.
Right.
So, and so
yeah, and so with this new revolutionary new move, the alley oop, the tropics come back from a huge deficit. And yeah, and it looks like they're about to poise to win the game, except for the point where the Spurs catch on to this alley-oop, so they try to block Clarence more and more. So
he's full out playing for the tropics now.
Yeah.
He has switched teams mid game, nobody objects to that.
Yeah, I guess
apparently that's just a thing you can do.
Look, I noticed that the official NBA. Or whatever, but there has to be some rules in the ABA saying you can't do something like that.
This is like, I mean, I don't even remember them doing this in like Air Bud and, and Space Jam. I don't remember anybody switching teams halfway through. Now, admittedly, I barely remember Space Jam from when we did it on this podcast, and I've never watched any of the Air Bud movies. But I know in the Air Bud movies, they say there ain't no rule that says a dog can't play basketball.
Yeah. Wait.
And I feel like there's got to be a rule that players can't switch teams halfway through a playoff game.
Whatever.
I feel like that's got to be a rule. That's got to be a violation of some rule somewhere. But nope, Clarence just straight up switches uniforms and everything.
The whole nine yards.
And everybody's just like, yep, that's cool.
It's cool, baby. Wait,
you mentioned... Wait, oh, we're doing this alley-oop thing. Oh, no, that's a foul.
No. Wait, you mentioned Space... Did we do Space Jam? I don't think we ever did.
We did Space Jam when the new one came out, right?
Did we? I don't think so. Who's in Space Jam? Oh, yeah, Bill Murray's in Space Jam. Maybe we did
Why would I have ever watched Space Jam if it wasn't for this podcast?
I don't know.
Why would I ever sit down in 2025 or 2026 and then, like, let me watch this movie Space Jam. I'm going to look it up, what episode was.
I'm looking it up right now. We did.
Yeah.
My mistake.
That was episode 147. So that was a while back.
That was a ways away.
That was a way, but it was when the sequel was coming out. I remember that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. Fair enough. I stand corrected. I stand down.
I thought I was the only one who forgot which movies we did and which ones we didn't.
No, that one slipped through my crack.
So if you want to hear about, if you're enjoying our basketball commentary on this episode and you want to, you're like, hey, what did these guys think about Space Jam? Never having seen it back in 1996. Well, check out episode 147, folks.
Mm-hmm. So since the other team is on to them about Clarence and the alley-oop, mm-hmm. Monix is saying, all right, well, now we got to go to another game plan. We got to go with the puke.
Run the puke.
Right. So they get fouled by Petrelli, and Jackie needs to throw two free throws with 2 seconds on the clock in order for their team to win. He shoots his free throws granny style.
Yes. He's taking it down low between his legs and he just kind of hoists it up and
Yes. Kisses the ball for good luck. And the first one, he does get it in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're close to winning the whole thing.
Right.
Second
and then
toss.
And he misses the second free throw.
Right. But Monix runs up, jumps up, slams the ball in. Oh, my God. Do you believe in miracles? They win fourth place.
They win the Mega Bowl. They make fourth place. So
the crowd runs out, celebrates, flip over some cop cars.
Mm-hmm.
The Spurs coach offers Clarence a spot back on his team.
No consequences for abandoning the Spurs halfway through the final playoff game.
Nope, not at all.
And playing for the opposition team. He's just like, oh, I can't stay mad at you, Andre 3000.
Hey-ya.
That song is undeniable, my friend.
Love me some sugar. I am your neighbor.
Yeah. Also, you inspired a really great Key and Peele sketch. So,
Oh, right.
Absolutely. That too.
Monix and Lynn kiss on the court. Kyle looks on and kisses and does like a little fist pump.
Yeah.
And the commissioner.
Yeah, not as funny as it should be.
It's not. That whole subplot is just like,
whatever. It's just so, it's so head scratching. It's just, it's a perplexing romantic subplot. I don't get what. Maybe it would have worked with different casting or something. I don't know.
I don't know. Why now?
I like this, but why now?
Why now? Exactly. And the commissioner, David Kickner, walks up to Jackie and says, hey, you're a hell of a promoter. I want you to work with me at the NBA. And, and he says, yeah, as long as I'm alive, you and your GM will have a job. And then immediately he gets attacked by the bear.
Immediately mauled by a bear. That was funny. I did enjoy that. I liked the abruptness of that. And I liked it, because the bear escaped earlier in the film. They had a payback later on. We needed more of that. We needed more setups to pay off in this thing.
Yeah, that would have been nice. And then it just ends with everybody running because the bear is loose.
And then we have a post-credits thing or a mid-credits thing where Dukes finally gets his money from the NBA buyout.
Yeah.
He gets his $10,000.
Yeah, and then that's pretty much it.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah.
This movie, it is a thing that exists.
It should have been so much better than it.
It's there. It's
yeah. I think we said it at the beginning. It feels like stuff you've seen Will Ferrell do before,
and he's done better elsewhere.
Yeah,
I haven't seen every one of Will Ferrell's sports comedies, but this is the least of the ones I've seen. I mean, it's certainly no Talladega Nights.
Blades of Glory. I wouldn't
put it as high as Blades of Glory. Those movies both entertain me a lot more than this one did.
Yeah, and I mean, now he's going to have the Netflix TV show The Hawk that comes out, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah.
What is The Hawk about? Is that another basketball thing? Or
no, golf. He's a golfer in that one.
Oh, I might have watched the trailer for that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
We had, you know, he had his whole fallout with
McKay.
Yeah, with Adam McKay, because he wasn't cast as the coach in the basketball series that he was doing.
Oh, the Lakers.
Netflix?
No, it was for HBO Max. It was like the Lakers.
Oh, yeah. It was like the beginning of the Lakers dynasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget what. Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers.
Winning
Dynasty.
Time, that was it. That was it.
Yeah, I never saw it, but a lot of my friends really liked it.
I mean, I heard it was good, and then, yeah, and Adam McKay, he ended up casting John C. Reilly
in
the part instead of Will Ferrell, and Will Ferrell apparently really wanted that part, and that was kind of the final straw of their friendship.
Oh, boy.
And I don't know if Will Ferrell's on the outs with John C. Reilly because of that, too, but...
I don't know. John C. Reilly, has he done... I feel like he's, like, retired from acting almost. It seems... I don't really...
He's been doing some publicity lately. I saw him... He was recently doing he did a Criterion Closet video, and he was on... Was he on the Conan O'Brien's podcast? I watched some interview with John C. Reilly. Yeah, it was like Conan O'Brien. So he's promoting something.
Okay.
He's touring with a band. That's what he's doing. He's got an album.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he was promoting.
Okay, John C.
Yeah. John C. Reilly just seems like such a freaking sweetheart.
Yeah. I'm down with him.
He just seems like a great guy. You can't dislike that guy.
No, no, he's good stuff. But I can dislike this movie.
I can, and I do dislike this movie. And this really shows like how Adam McKay had the touch for these Will Ferrell comedies. Because, like, we've seen the ones that Adam McKay has directed, like Anchorman and Step Brothers and other stuff. And then we've seen some of the ones that Adam McKay has not directed, like this and Holmes and Watson. And, oh, boy, they do not really work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's something about McKay that, like, he gets it a lot more.
Yeah. And it's just a shame that they're... A, apparently not getting along these days, and also B, Adam McKay doesn't seem to want to do the wacky comedies that he used to. You know, he's
he doesn't.
Oh, I want to make serious films about politics and stuff. And
yeah, I'm a grown up now.
I mean, you know, and that's his prerogative, but it's like you're so good at the comedy, though.
Yeah, but I don't know if your heart's not in it, then I don't
yeah,
know.
True.
Yeah, c'est la vie, though.
No, I just want it to be like 2006 again, and them making more goofy comedies together.
Same. Why can't it be the past?
Yeah.
Yeah, but this movie it's a bit of a letdown, a bit of a disappointment, and don't need to see it. And that's our episode, guys.
I guess we're done. It's semi-pro. You can give it a miss. I guess I don't remember if I consciously decided not to see this in 2008 or if I just didn't get around to it before it left theaters. But all I can say is good call past me.
You're killing it. Well done.
I mean,
well done.
Yeah, just is such a shame. It didn't really work.
It should have worked.
Should have worked so much better.
It just doesn't. We could have had it all.
Yeah.
But that's the episode, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast. As always, you can follow us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You could listen to this madness on our YouTube page. Go to non-productive.com. Donate to
our look Patreon. Up our episode on Space Jam.
Yes.
Episode 147.
The memorable episode that we did on Space Jam. Go listen to that.
Listen to it and then start asking Darren all sorts of very specific questions about it, and he won't remember him at all.
Yes, I will. I will look at you blankly and just walk away.
That's right.
So yeah, non-productive.com, and as always, you can follow me on all the socials at Darren Credible, D-A-R-A-N Credible.
And you can follow me on all the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And so that's it for this week. Semi-pro.
Yeah. But we're going to do some other stuff this summer. We're going to do some bigger, better stuff this summer. If you have any recommendations of stuff we could do, movies, TV shows, specials and the like, drop us a line. Let us know what you think.
Suggestions.
Suggestions. That's the word. Thank you.
That's the word. Yeah.
That's the ticket. Take all the suggestions quite seriously.
Yeah, but probably if you recommend a movie, that's a better shot than a TV show because it takes a long time to go through a whole TV show.
Right. TV shows and specials. We'll cut it off to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, I mean movies and specials, not TV
shows. Movies and specials. Yeah.
Right.
TV shows.
Yeah,
nothing against TV shows. It just takes a long time to watch them. Yeah.
So movies and specials.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yes. That'll be good. So we're open to suggestions. We got most of the summer to go. So SNL is not going to be back till like September, October, something like that. So yeah, let us know what you want to hear us cover in the last few months of summer.
Let us know.
As long as we haven't done it before, we're up for it, baby.
Indeed. Absolutely.
It just has to be like a movie starring an SNL alum.
That's all we ask.
And, one we haven't watched for the podcast before.
That's right. It's all we ask. It's easy as possible.
That's your homework assignment. Check out the archives.
Deep dive. Like,
hey, this was a great episode that they did. What's another great episode they could do? What's a movie they could do? I want to see them do like Zoolander or Mystery Men or The Hangover or Hot Tub Time Machine. Those all star SNL alums. Why don't they do one of those movies? Don't they like me?
don't they like me? I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So let us know. We're open to suggestions is what I'm saying. We're going to do some more thinking. We're going to have something really cool for you next week. So.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, nerd out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.